Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
Last week, we began really in earnest looking at Relevant magazine. And I have, you know, come up with many different nicknames for the magazine. I think I like the most current one that I've come up with. I'm almost like Donald Trump coming up with nicknames here. I'm not quite as good as him at it, but Relevant magazine, I think Illiterate magazine is probably best, or at least biblically illiterate, because of course the many errors and the deceptions that are a part of it. And I've pointed out progressive Christianity and the New Apostolic Reformation and word faith and contemplative prayer and contemplative disciplines. These, all these practices, you know, the millennials, the 20-somethings, the 30-something people are being catered to with these type of ideas and beliefs. I would say probably partly because they love it and they want it, and because they have itching ears, and also partly because of the financial greed involved in putting out the magazine and giving the people what they want, you know, scratching them where they itch. If you have itching ears, well, you got to give them teachers that'll give them what they want to hear, right? Well, I think that's the that's what's taking place, of course, with Relevant magazine. This is one of several magazines that I've looked at two already in the past. We've looked at Charisma and Sojourners. And as I've said before, Relevant is sort of a almost like a combination of those two magazines, with their emphasis on liberalism and on extreme charismania, whether it's in the form of false prophets, false apostles of the New Apostolic Reformation, or whether it's involved with prosperity doctrine, faith doctrine, or the contemplative prayer, of course, and that mixes so well with progressives and emergent liberal Christians. So anyway, that's just the little backdrop. But I left you last week as I was beginning to read an article, and it was called Happily Ever After, and I made reference, of course, to the Timothy verses in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 4, of how Paul warns that in the last days many are going to be turned to fables. And, you know, it can be translated, I believe, fables, or in other words, I think there's various ways it can be translated, but the idea is myths, fables, or fairy tales. So Happily Ever After is a wonderful title for this piece of nonsense by this man named Jesse Carey in Relevant magazine, because, of course, it's dealing with the doctrine of hell and a movie that has come out about you know, and let's just read what the article says about itself. Okay, just a second here. Okay, the it's about the real-life Christians who believe in an afterlife with no hell. That's what the article is about, a movie that's come out on Netflix called Come Sunday. And it's basically about the life of Carlton Pearson, who used to be a Pentecostal preacher and singer, who was a darling of TBN and a close friend of Oral Roberts, who mentored him. And even Oral Roberts had to you know, cut the tie to Carlton Pearson when he decided there was no more hell. Even Oral Roberts, you know, maybe that 900-foot Jesus gave him that advice. I don't know. Excuse my humor here, but can you imagine Oral Roberts cutting you off? I don't know. I mean, you got to be pretty bad to become so doctrinally unsound that even Oral Roberts is going to cut you off, because, you know, Oral's got some, has had some issues in the past himself. Now, the actor, and I know I'll butcher his name, his Chiwetel? Oh, this is terrible. Two names like this, it's really a battle. Chiwetel, and forgive me, he's probably a great actor. Chiwetel Ejiofor. How's that, folks? Look it up. And producer Ira Glass were the key driving forces behind this movie. And I want to read this article from Relevant. magazine. One night, 15 years ago, Carlton Pearson was sitting in his home when a news report about starving people in Uganda came on TV. The megachurch pastor began to pray. Pearson, who described himself at the time as a fundamentalist Pentecostal evangelical Christian, asked God what he could do to help while images of human suffering flashed on the TV screen. God, he says, told him that, well, if Christianity works like he thinks it works, like Carlton thinks it works, then someone needs to preach the gospel to unbelievers so that they don't go to hell forever when they die. Pearson's response, he burst into tears saying, God, don't put that guilt on me. I can't save the whole world. What he believes God told him next would alter the course of Pearson's entire life and serves as the basis of a controversial new film on Netflix called Come Sunday. Pearson says that in the next moment, God told him, precisely, you can't save this whole world. That's what we did. We, I assume being the Trinity, I guess that's what he means. You think we're sucking them into hell? Can't you see they're already there? That's hell, I guess referring specifically to Uganda and the world in general, since apparently God was giving Carlton a new revelation, because he was speaking it to him and telling him, as we hear people so often tell us new things that God's doing. The new things. I've talked about that in the past. Anyway, like when Oral Roberts had a new experience with the 900-foot Jesus. I just want to elaborate on that. For those of you who don't remember, you know, Oral Roberts had some financial difficulties. He had overextended himself on a hospital in Tulsa. Even though many warned him that there was no need for more hospital rooms in the city, he went on anyway. He came up short and basically had to beg everybody to come up with $8 million, or otherwise God was going to kill him. And because the 800-foot Jesus came to him in a vision, or not a vision, well, maybe it was a vision, I'm not sure. But an 800 or 900-foot Jesus, I'm getting my numbers mixed up here, came to Oral. And this is why I spoke in such a way concerning Oral. You know, it's almost, in a way, it's surprising that he rejected Carlton Pearson when Carlton rejected hell. But I guess that was one step beyond what Oral could handle. So anyway, I'll leave Oral alone for a while and move back to Carlton. So he said, can't you see they're already in hell? That's hell. In that moment, Carlton Pearson, the host of TBN TV shows, a man who counted Billy Graham and Oral Roberts as close friends, stopped believing that hell was a destination that unbelievers go to when they die. In that same moment, for many in the church, Carlton Pearson became a heretic. The film version of these events and their aftermath features an all-star cast, including Jason Segel as Pearson's co-pastor and best friend, Martin Sheen as Oral Roberts, Chiwetel, there we go again, Ejiofor as Pearson, Danny Glover as Pearson's father, Kendola Rashad as Pearson's wife, Gina, and many others. The article goes on to say, but along with examining Pearson's personal story, the film is concerned with a larger, deeper theme. What happens when someone in the church does something that jeopardizes the principles of it, it being the church? How will a community that's supposed to be built on the principles of forgiveness, on the principle of forgiveness, react when a pastor does something seemingly unforgivable? What happens when someone becomes a heretic? Reading on. Glass, the creator of podcast and radio series The American Life, and oh, by the way, he's also an atheist, is a producer of the film and based the movie on a 2005 episode of the show called Heretics. The movie, in many ways, is about living in a tension, a loving God and an eternal hell, caring for your pastor but hating heresy, building community and casting out false teachers. He says, even today, Pearson himself lives in a sort of tension. He still wrestles with his revelation. I'm constantly battling between what my mind believes, and I might say, well, how about what God says, rather than what just your mind believes, which is what I've been taught, in other words, what he's been taught is what God has said and what his mind believes and told my whole life and what my soul or maybe my cells know. So suddenly now he's been spoken to, he believes, by God. Couldn't be a seducing spirit, could it? Couldn't be a deceiving spirit denying the doctrine, the sound doctrine of the eternal hell that Christ died to keep us from. Couldn't be a seducing spirit that came and convinced him now to say that now his soul or maybe his cells know. So his mind was taught by what the Bible says, but now God has given him new truth. God's doing a new thing, you know. Have you ever heard that one? So Pearson says, comparing what he believed for most of his life about exclusion of salvation through Christ and what he now believes. All right. Going on in the article, a history of heretics. In the wake of Pearson announcing his personal revelation, there you go again, that personal revelation to his church, he became something worse than a pariah. He was dangerous. He was, of course, spiritually dangerous. He no longer believed in hell, and others warned if you joined him in his new worldview, you could risk spending eternity there yourself. Absolutely the truth, by the way. Even now, it's difficult for him to talk about. He goes on in the article, it's a feeling many in Christianity have felt. Historically, the church has not been kind to its heretics. Like the church should be kind to its heretics, I assume. I guess this is what the author is trying to tell us. I don't know. No, but he has a further point, and you'll see it. In the years after Christ, believers openly debated his teachings. Did they? Did true believers debate Christ's teachings? Could they be true believers if they debated Christ's true teachings? Anyway, while still conscious of his warnings about the dangers of false teachers. Okay, now in the years after Christ, believers openly debated his teachings while still conscious of his warning about the dangers of false teachers. Now, you know, there were church councils that established what Christ had said was true about Arius the heretic, you know, believing that God was a created being, etc., you know. But, you know, believers, if you were truly a believer, how could you debate what Jesus clearly said? You might not have fully understood it or the full implications. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. But in AD 385, things took a dark turn as Christianity became more institutionalized. And this is where, of course, blame is pinned on all Christians for all time because of the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church and the traditions of men that crept in and the false teachings, etc. This is where true believers who believe what Christ said in his word get blamed for all the other things that happened. And I will not take blame for those things because I had nothing to do with them, did not believe in them, and do not support them. But anyway, I digress. But in AD 385, things took a dark turn as Christianity became more institutionalized. A man named Priscillian began to preach some unorthodox things about the gospel and was executed after powerful people deemed his beliefs to be too far from conventional understandings about the Bible. He became the first person to die for heretical beliefs. Well, how about that, my audience? I can't remember if I've ever killed anybody for being a heretic. Have you? I'm assuming probably most of you have never killed somebody for being a heretic. I hope not. Jesus never taught us to kill anybody for being a heretic, and I certainly haven't, and I don't have any plans to do that. Maybe I'll die as a martyr for Christ someday, but I don't plan on killing anybody for being a heretic, but I will certainly speak out against heresies because, of course, they will lead to people's spiritual death. But I'm not going to kill them for believing that because that kind of defeats the purpose. If they die physically, well, and then they're in that heresy, well, they're going to move right on into spiritual death. So don't see the benefit of that for a true Christian to be killing heretics. But anyway, I digress again. Afterward, violence was a frequent reaction to heretical sects that arose on the fringes of Christianity. Violence by who, I might say? This author would have you believe that violence was enacted by true Christians upon heretics. No, not by true Christians. By false Christians, yes. As I've mentioned, the Catholic Church, the Orthodox Church. Now, starting in the 1400s, and I shouldn't say the Orthodox Church. I take that back. I can't immediately prove that statement, but I do know the Roman Catholic Church, obviously, as this author knows, committed some horrendous acts in the name of Christ, which makes us all look bad, of course. Afterward, violence was a frequent reaction to heretical sects that arose on the fringes of Christianity. Starting in the 1400s, the Spanish Inquisition tortured, prosecuted, and even publicly executed tens of thousands of individuals suspected of being heretics. And of course, to that I would say, that's awful. That's appalling. Who would do that? Not a Christian. And no Christian did. Now, people who claim to be Christians did. Yes, I understand that. Today, heretics within modern American Christianity aren't likely to face violence or criminal prosecution, but the response within the church can still be severe. And of course, it should be severe. And in fact, the most severe critics that I know of heresy are people like, I don't know, Jesus Christ, the Apostle Paul, the Apostle John, the Apostle Peter. Very severe. And you'll find the warnings against false prophets, false teachers, wolves in sheep's clothing throughout the New Testament. And not to mention the Old Testament, of course. But when we talk about Christianity in the New Testament, severe responses to heresies. Well, gee, I can't think of any people more severe against it than our Lord and his apostles. So the author goes on to say, and well, let me just quote, of course, Matthew 7 here. I always like to quote these verses. They're so powerful. You know, Jesus said, Matthew 7:15, "Beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves." There's a warning against a false prophet who's bringing you heresy. He's a heretic. Oh, Jesus, sorry, that's a little harsh, isn't it? No, it's not harsh at all. It's what we should all do. We should warn people. Pray for that heretic. Pray for that false prophet. But warn people about their leaven, their false teaching. And then further down the chapter, Jesus said, "Not everyone that says unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that does the will of the Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, and in your name have cast out devils, and in your name done many wonderful works? Then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity." See, I, Randy Shelton here, I don't have the power to send somebody to hell, and God has not called me to kill any heretics. But Jesus Christ, all judgment has been turned over to him. And you read his powerful, very somber words here that people need to take note of. Because there's many, many people, he says, that are claiming to do all these wonderful works in his names. And he's going to say, I never knew you. And he's going to say, depart. And he's going to send them for eternity to this place known as hell, which this article and this magazine, of course, doesn't want you to believe in. Anyway, moving on. If Pearson's story sounds familiar, it's because an extremely similar one played out even more recently with another rising star, Rob Bell. He was branded as the next Billy Graham by Time magazine when he first began to make a name for himself as a fairly conventional pastor. But after the publication of the book Love Wins, which also questions traditional teachings about hell, he too drew widespread denouncement from major Christian leaders. "Our situation is almost identical," Pearson says. Bell, who is the subject of a recent documentary called The Heretic, forgive me for laughing, it's a serious subject, but you know, The Heretic, well, isn't that appropriate, says his first brush with accusations of heresy actually came much earlier. He was in his early 30s at the time and was the pastor of Mars Hill Church, which he had founded. "I did a whole series of sermons on women's equality," Bell says. "Looking back, and I remember a whole group of people organized to have me removed from the church I started. Hundreds had orchestrated a campaign to discredit his teachings. That was probably the first time I was on the receiving end of that particular venom that people spew when they believe they are defending the Almighty," he remembers. When he concluded the controversial sermon series, he decided to hold a Q&A style event, hoping that the open forum would foster healthy discussion for people in his church. Instead, angry critics showed up to express their outrage at his teaching. Yeah, that's right, Rob. Let's all gather together and let's all have a conversation. Let's all talk about these things. You know, hey, did Jesus really die on the cross? You know, is homosexuality really a sin? Let's talk about these things that God clearly tells us, you know, directly and without any confusion from his word. Let's debate these doctrines that God refers to as sound doctrines, and let's just see if we can somehow make them hard to understand, make them cloudy some way. Anyway, reading on in the article, a happy ending. I guess I'm venting a little bit myself because of my own anger against those who would lead others astray, like Rob Bell and like Carlton Pearson and like Relevant Magazine. It makes me angry. It makes me angry that young people, old people, all kinds of people are being deceived. That's why I do this program, Deception in the Last Days. It's not because I want to criticize everybody I can and I like to be a self-righteous kind of a holier-than-thou person. It's just that I want to stick with what God's Word warns will come in the last days so that we all, listening to this program and to other people in apologetics and discernment ministries, can try to help some, help a few, perhaps, who will not be deceived by all the deception that's coming, including the ultimate deception of the Antichrist. Anyway, the article goes on. A happy ending? When making this film, Glass and Edgefor understood just how sensitive the issue of heresy and figures like Pearson and Bell can be to many Christians. That's why their approach wasn't to try to prove one side wrong. Instead, the story is about people, and one of the most important people in the story is famed evangelist and university founder Oral Roberts. In real life, Roberts was extremely close to Pearson, I mentioned that earlier, and served as his mentor. That is, before Pearson changed his beliefs about hell. And I made the note here, and I already pointed out, I think, and you know, it's good to see that Oral Roberts did something right, okay? But anyway, the article goes on. My fear with the film is that evangelicals will know it's about Bishop Pearson, and they'll feel like, and you notice he still refers to him as Bishop Pearson? Bishop of what? Anyway, and they'll feel like, I don't support what he stands for, so I'm not going to see it, Glass says. My hope would be that they would come out and see it and realize it's not just a story about him, that is Pearson. It's a story about everybody in the church. We think there should be more stories in the church. And then the lead actor who played Pearson, Edgefor, agrees that the film isn't about arguing about doctrine. It's about connecting with people who think differently. When asked what he hopes people will take away from the story, he says, it's people's capacity to change and people's capacity to connect with one another, the capacity to have empathy and engage with other people, with other points of view. It's a story he believes is important to tell, even if he catches hell for it. Well, I would say to that, the capacity to have empathy and engage with other people with other points of view. I would say that that's an encouragement to compromise truth for error. I would say that would be having empathy for people and helping direct them to their eternal home in the lake of fire, which isn't love at all, which isn't empathetic at all, which isn't speaking the truth at all, and which is not what God has commanded his people to do. So in that particular article, and that is, of course, from a magazine that I'll be looking at later. I mean, that particular issue of that magazine I'll be looking at later. Now, let me find my notes quickly here. I also wanted to comment on a current event that was recent, and actually, you know, excuse me, this current event was something that takes place at this season every year, or not every year, we don't have hurricanes every year, but it's a current event that, again, I think kind of was a providential in terms of my comments about a certain prophet, or basically who has turned out to be a false prophet by the name of Pat Robertson. And the Hurricane Florence, of course, was in the news recently, and I had mentioned in the past, recently there was on Facebook Messenger, I had received a videotape by a certain man by the name of Lance Wallnau. And again, this kind of providentially dovetails, I think, with what we were talking about, the New Apostolic Reformation group, which, as I have said on many occasions, along with progressive Christianity, is one of the topics that is often commented on within and supported and promoted, and some of the figures from this movement in Relevant magazine. And this particular individual, Lance Wallnau, who was one of the few people who had predicted Trump's re-election, this was one of his predictions that he got right. Because, of course, he claims to be a prophet. And he is, as I've mentioned before, is one of the people on the Elijah list, which is the pay-for-prophecy site where you can pay to get, you know, some of the resident prophets there, including Lance, to give you their prophecies. I assume that's how it works with Lance. I do know that he's listed as one of their prophets on the Elijah List website. But anyway, I had spoken about this man because somebody had sent out a video concerning him about a recent meeting that President Trump had with several religious leaders. And please keep our president in prayer, as, of course, some of the Christian people that he is in contact with and gets counsel with are, I believe, good Christians, and some of them not so much, unfortunately. And that's it is what it is, folks. But pray for, you know, discernment. Pray for salvation, perhaps, that Donald Trump needs to be saved. But I do believe that God is using some of his programs and some of the things that he's doing in the life of our country. But I'm getting off topic a little bit. And I'm running out of time as well. But I wanted to speak, or at least get my foot in the door, concerning this event, this current event of this hurricane, because Pat Roberts was in the news again. And I had mentioned Lance Wallnau because I had read from an article in the CBN News website, which CBN, of course, Christian Broadcasting Network, which is owned by Pat Robertson. And so I wanted to get my foot in the door this week, and then next week we will continue to look at this Hurricane Florence and Lance Wallnau a little bit, and then more to the point, look at Pat Robertson. But I'm just about out of time, so we will look a little bit more next week.